You've been listening to the special Best of 2008 Big Band Show Encore presentation. Now it's time for the new WHFR Journal here on WHFR.FM, WHFR, the station making waves. That's a new theme song for the new WHFR Journal. Somebody said, oh, the other one is kind of old, and well, okay. So, and I thought because our show is local and alternative views about Dearborn and the surrounding area that the theme from the TV series Bones might get you in the mood. We're really looking closely at those skeletons in the closet or wherever else they might be. Well, I hope you enjoyed that humorous little touch, and it may continue, and Bones is one of my favorite TV shows anyway, so there you are. Yes, it is the end of the month, almost. It's January 30th today, 2009. My name is Jay Koronik, happy to be your host today. We have a lot of things happening. We expect some special guests halfway through the show, and that'll be a lot of fun because there's going to be a lot of microphones and some information about the Alternative Energy Conference coming up here on campus next week, Friday, one of the first sort of green conferences that I've ever heard of here in the city of Detroit, and it's a it's not an expo that would be in Cobo Center, not that size, but some great things happening. And so we have three of the coordinators from the campus here at Henry Ford Community College that are expected to be here and to talk about it and let you know what's available. It's a free conference, too. Free. Great price. Starts at 8:30 in the morning, and the conference ends, all the different sessions end by 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So more information later about that. At this point, I want to start with our issues of this week from our local papers, the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald. To start with, we announced last week from the papers that the city of Dearborn took the initiative and filed suit against Burton and Katzman. They're the developers of the so-called Jacobson's Department Store area in West Dearborn. If anybody remembers, there was a department store there a long time ago. At this point, that lawsuit is in progress. And we have the report here about the response from the Dearborn City Council. Okay. First of all, the city totally, I maybe didn't know this, let me go over it. The city's lawsuit demands the completion of the project and asks for more than $349,000 in unpaid taxes, penalties, and interest, and damages of $16.4 million to cover the city's cost for construction of the two parking lots. Named in the lawsuit as defendants, of course, with Burton Katzman Company, are West Village Commons, LLC, Abbey Homes, LLC, Peter Burton, a partner and president of Burton Katzman, Robert Katzman, a partner in Burton Katzman, and Charles DiMaggio, senior vice president of project management for Burton Katzman, and Daniel Scher, he shared in the responsibilities here, I guess, an attorney for Burton Katzman. Lawsuit became the only option, according to the city, and we have some responses from Dearborn City Councilman, first of all, Bob Abraham, looking at the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, January 25th. Bob Abraham said, I fully support the lawsuit and the mayor on this difficult decision. However, I remain extremely disappointed in Burton Katzman's performance and deception when we were only trying to provide the much-needed density and development in downtown West Dearborn. I mean, everybody's, the city was trying to do what was right for everybody and trying to be friendly and lenient, and it looks like they got taken advantage of here is what he's referring to. Deadlines for completion of the $65 million West Village Commons project, as it's called, passed more than a year ago. That's according to Dearborn Mayor Jack B. O'Reilly. But the company continued to discuss finishing a 2003 agreement with the city for two commercial buildings, one 6 to 7 story hotel and one commercial residential, and 48 condos. And that didn't happen. And the city was made aware of the dissolution of they filed a certificate of dissolution with the Michigan Department of Labor and Economic Growth in April 2008, however. And the city wasn't made aware of that dissolution until January 9th of this year. Well, that took a little while. O'Reilly said the lawsuit was filed only after more than 18 months of proactive discussion with Burton Katzman to find suitable alternatives that were reasonable given the changing economic climate. We're going to talk about the climate later today, in fact, alternative energy needs and so on. But anyway, O'Reilly went on to say it became apparent a lawsuit was our only avenue. And that has become even clearer after we discovered that the parties weren't honest with us. He said we had to go up to the MEDC to find this out, O'Reilly said Monday. They never told us they were going to dissolve. We didn't know about it until we were preparing our lawsuit. That's the problem in Michigan with LLCs. They don't have any assets. They just give out contracts. Even if we do win the suit, we may not get any money. We're going to go after the individual assets. DiMaggio said on Wednesday that the company said the company has no comment on the suit, but did say Burton Katzman is alive and well, and the company has not dissolved. That we've done our part. It's up to them to see if they want to settle, but I'm sure we'll have some dialogue, according to O'Reilly. And, of course, the company that is Burton Katzman and the other LLC here, they cite the economy as the reason for the delay. However, the city's lawsuit reads, as we said last week, quote, economic conditions are not recognized as a, quote, permitted delay, unquote, or and, quote, unavoidable delay, unquote, that would allow construction to be postponed. And Council President Pro Tem Nancy Hubbard says, I'm surprised that they would show bad faith after the city had tried so hard to be patient and find a solution that was best for everybody. So, and I'm sure Tom Tefelsky, and I guess he wasn't at the meeting where this was discussed or brought up and they got the comments. Otherwise, Nancy Hubbard wouldn't have been Pro Tem. Unless you're always pro tem, waiting for the president to not be there. But I'm sure Tom Tefelsky would have been very much in support. He wasn't quoted in that article, but he was very upset with extensions granted not only to Burton Katzman, but other developers in the city, like the East Dearborn developers, that have not proceeded really on track either. But West Dearborn, it's a more egregious problem because of all the contracts in place, all the promises made, and things just not happening. And so and then, of course, I'm sure the final straw was to discover that the company you're dealing with has been dissolved, you know, at least by the one document. I mean, they say, well, Burton Katzman's still here, but those other LLCs apparently are not, like West Village Commons LLC, whatever that stands for. So, moving on to Wednesday, January 28th, Dearborn Press and Guide. Very interesting story here. Well, let's go back to page 8A of last Sunday. A couple of editorial opinions. You should always read the editorial opinion. That's one reason to get the paper. Read the opinions, the well-written, well-thought-through, well-presented ideas of people that know what's going on locally. And Tom Watkins was formerly head of the Michigan Board of Education, and I didn't think he had a stellar record, and he was sort of pressured out, moved out by Governor Granholm to get someone else in there. And of course, our State Board of Ed, as I've told you since I've been involved in Michigan education for 40 years, has not had one of the stellar performances of all the states in the U.S., and Michigan supports its schools almost, its higher education anyway, almost at the bottom of all 50 states. So the state of Michigan has not done much, either through the State Board of Ed or through the legislature, to fund and support schools in Michigan, and especially higher education. And Tom was part of the problem. But he has a regular column, and he's a consultant now to business, and he goes to China a lot, blah, blah, blah. But he does have some well-thought-through opinions. Every now and then you can see he kind of throws a jab at Jennifer Granholm, because she took him out of his high-paying job here in the state of Michigan where he wasn't doing very much. But nonetheless, he has some great ideas. And these are some things he points out. This is from page 8A of last Sunday's Press and Guide. About the state of Michigan. Can we afford the government we have? And here's some of his ideas. He goes over and over about certain people in the government not fulfilling their duties. But he said Michigan must stop the spend and pretend spree and go on a reform and transform campaign. Sort of alliterative. Isn't that cute? And he says, here are three reforms the legislature should make now. So what do you think of these, if you think of these things at all? Number one, consolidations and agreements to share services. He says it could save millions of dollars. Michigan has 83 counties, more than 1,200 townships, nearly 500 cities and villages with fewer than 10,000 residents, more than 550 public schools, districts, hundreds of charter schools, and 57 intermediate school districts. Eliminate the duplicate bureaucracy. The future state aid tie future state aid to demonstrating significant savings at all levels of government. Next point that he brings, he goes on to say here, let's see. Yeah, they don't have the points right. But the second point is Michigan is one of four states that spends more on prisons than on higher education. So in other words, we're almost at the bottom of a scale in terms of funding for these states. Jeez, that's frustrating. Okay, almost as bad as not spending money on higher ed, but you're spending more money on prisons. Does that mean we have great prisons? No, but we have a problem with our justice system. We have a problem that may have a deeper social issues involved. In other words, what causes people to do criminal acts? Okay. Do we have people in prison that shouldn't be in prison? Do we have people, for example, and he doesn't bring it out here, but that are doing, you know, non-harmful types of illegal behavior? Some people would say drug users shouldn't be in prison. And many of them are. In fact, it used to be a few years ago, 1 ounce of marijuana get you 10 years in jail. I think that was in Texas, but I mean, it was ridiculous. Okay. So people that are only harming themselves, okay, criminal behavior that's not harmful to society, they need help, they need services, but putting them in prison doesn't make sense. And I know we have a bunch of those kinds of people in prison. Now, of course, who mostly is in prison? The lower classes, the lower economic classes. Does that mean there's no criminals among the rich and famous? Of course not. But it's difficult to prosecute them. So do we have to get better prosecutors? We have overflowing prisons, and we're paying to house all these people. There's got to be other answers. So the justice system, I agree with him. We got to do something about that, as well as not supporting our higher education programs well at all. And without education, without good lower, you know, K-12 education as well as higher ed, people don't have any options. But behavior that might send them to prison. Then he says, Tom Watkins now, in his opinion here, more action is needed to address the cost of pensions and health care of educators and other public employees. The fixes to date are anemic. Changes can be made without unfairly burdening employees. Past spending increases for K-12 education have not covered rising pension, health care, and other legacy costs. Now that the state has taken over to pay schools, you know, the property taxes don't go to your local school district. They go to the state first. And the state decides how to split them up and how much to give back. Okay. He says, never has it been more important to come together in shared purpose to tackle the common challenges we face. And I want to emphasize, too, that maybe it can't be done quickly. You know, we need a stimulus bill and all that quickly to do something. Throw some money out there to get things flowing again, to get business back on its feet and people back on their feet. But the number one thing that would give people more money is if they didn't have to spend anything on health care directly. In other words, the money in their paycheck that is subtracted for health care expenses, health care insurance, that money would come to them. And the federal government, from other kinds of resources, would begin paying for single-payer health care. Okay, I mean, I'm sorry, but President Obama's plan, as well as I know it, as well as it was proposed and enunciated, delineated over during the campaign, was he wants health insurance for everybody, but you got to pay health. It'll be health insurance through the people who are providing health insurance now. Okay, and those costs are the highest in the world. Are we getting the best services in the world for that? No. No. So too large a percent of our own personal budget is going into healthcare costs, which are not, we're not getting the value back for that. There have been some great proposals I've heard, and single-payer healthcare, especially, you know, even the auto industry realizes they can't compete with Germany, Japan, and other countries that pay for the healthcare of at least, if not more, than the workers in the auto plants over there. GM has said, can't afford the healthcare. You know, that's what's bringing us down here. And Ford and Chrysler would agree, I'm sure. And, you know, in the long term, that would be the single best thing other than to stop paying money into wars that we can't win and we shouldn't have started in the first place. That's a big drain on the budget, right? So anyway, I thought you'd want to know Tom Watkins' ideas on that. At 16 minutes after the hour in the new WHFR Journal, we're making ways, WHFR.fm. This show is available as a podcast, too, all the way back, I don't know, months back. If you missed something months ago, just go to WHFR.fm, click on Journal, big Journal button, and then look for the date you want. And there you are. And today's show from Friday, the 30th of January, will be available shortly after 2 o'clock. As soon as we finish it, zap, there it is on the website. And you can download it, MP3 file, play it on your iPod, and jog down the street to it, whatever you want to do. Tim Skubick, his view from Lansing editorial, also from the 25th. He says, state legislatures, legislators are back in Lansing and working part of the time. He says, and you wonder why everybody favors a part-time legislature. The prevailing public attitude is, we already have one, but lawmakers still drag down a full-time paycheck. On most jobs, the boss can tell who shows up, but there's limited accountability when it comes to the folks you hire to run state government, he says. Take the recent holiday break for starters. Lawmakers left town on December 18th and returned here on January 14th for a really neat holiday break of 27 days. One of the first acts of House members was to basically adjourn until January 27th. Nice work if you can get it, he says. Now, on the surface, one might assume that during that time away from the Capitol, lawmakers were loafing. To be fair, we just don't know. Legislative leaders defend their colleagues by claiming they are home working in the district, unquote. That might be true, he says, but it might not. Short of calling all 148 legislators every day and asking them what they are doing, taxpayers just have to trust that they are on the job at home. At least when there are session days, reporters can keep tabs on who is here and who isn't in Lansing. And when a lawmaker misses a session, excuses are filed. But the excuses are worthless, says Tim Skubick. He says at the beginning of each session, somebody will get up and say, Mr. Speaker, an excuse for Representative so-and-so and so-and-so. The excuse is always granted, and if you're sitting in the balcony, you foolishly assume that means something. It doesn't. Lawmakers are not required to file any explanation. An attempt to reform that was, of course, killed by lawmakers last year. Nice job if you can get it, says Tim Skubick over and over again here. But back to the legislative schedule. Last year, the House and Senate spent around 100 days in Lansing, and while they are technically back in session this month, they're not exactly getting off off to an urgent start. He said you can thank Governor Jennifer Granholm for that in part. Lawmakers need to see her blueprint for action, but they'll have to wait until February 3rd to hear her State of the State address. It was not only thus. Former Governor John Swainson spoke on January 12th, 1961, Governor George Romney on January 10th, 63, and January 11th the next year. The latest former Governor Bill Milliken spoke was January 15th in 1981. That was pretty much the pattern until the Granholm folks hit town. For some reason, it's now always late January, early February. Asked about this the other day, the governor confessed she was not aware of the earlier tradition. Now look, says Tim Skubick. She's the governor and can deliver her talk any darn time she wants, but by delaying it, it adds more to the negative public perception of Lansing. New President Barack Obama demanded legislation on his desk the first day he took office. There's no such urgency around these legislative halls, but leaders again reassure the public, just because you can't see us working doesn't mean we aren't. To assuage the public, which is loath to trust any politician, if all these Lansing folks were smart, they'd hit the ground running on day one. But tradition dictates otherwise. nice work, and so forth and so forth. Those are the exact words of Tim Skupik. He is host of the great public TV show Off the Record. Check your local listings, as they say. And he does blog regularly, and you can read his other editorial comments like this one at pressandguide.com. Okay, now we can turn to the Press and Guide from this Wednesday. Exciting story here. Did you know that part of the Clint Eastwood movie Gran Torino, which has had pretty good success in the movie theaters, was shot here in Michigan? And during the shooting in Michigan, both on camera and off, they needed some, as they call them, craft services. They needed some food. They needed some Asian food prepared. And they found a wonderful restaurant called Bangkok 96, which is Telegraph Road south of Michigan Avenue, who provided all the ethnic food for the movie. Okay, and it got him a lot of business, and everybody was very happy, and she did a lot of very special things. Read this story, front page of the Press and Guide from Wednesday. And then in the little box next to it, a related story, restaurant owners fighting deportation. The same person who had the success with this movie, at Bangkok 96, the owners of that, Genevieve Vang, is asking for an act of Congress to help stay in the country. A bill U.S. Senator Carl Levin introduced in June 2007 that would allow the Vangs, that's her last name, Genevieve Vang, to stay in the United States, expired with the arrival of the new Congress this month, because bills only are in, only out there for so long, I guess. Genevieve and Guy Vang, along with their eldest daughters, are hopeful Levin's office will reintroduce the brief bill that permits them to stay. As long as the bill is pending, the clock stops on their deportation. Guy and Genevieve Vang and their daughters, Caroline and Melanie, were told in 2007 they would have to leave the United States. Before that, the family had spent years wrangling with Immigration and Naturalization Services, also known by the acronym INS. Even though you're not on the ins with them, you're on the outs. That's when you, okay. Trying to find a way to stay. The federal agency had allowed them to live here more than a decade before apparently realizing they didn't qualify for residency. Levin's office has said he's willing to reintroduce the bill, and I guess they'll go ahead. Guy Vang's father is now a U.S. citizen. He's filed a petition to get citizenship for the Vang family, and they have lived in the country for 20 years. But because the government considers the family to be here without status, they would have to leave the United States for a substantial period of time before they would be allowed to return. Yeah, this is a mess. You know, we need immigration policies reviewed, changed, improved, whatever. Okay. And now we're almost coming up to the halfway points. Got a couple other quick stories to talk about here. We're looking at the, I wanted to mention there's a raffle going on for a new Corvette or $40,000. It happens every year. It's a Dearborn Firefighters raffle to help their burn drive unit. And in fact, there's been a couple stories in the paper recently how the burn drive has been spending the money to help burn victims. Yeah, that don't have the resources any other way. And so it's a very, very important raffle to support, very important cause to support. You can give money even if you don't want to, you know, have the chance to win the $40,000. I think there's other prizes like a trip to Las Vegas and some other things. So if you go past a Dearborn fire station and they have a sign up, you know, I know the one on Evergreen Road south of Michigan Avenue, the main fire station, as it's referred to, next to the Dearborn main post office on Greenfield there. They have a Corvette actually parked out there just to get your spirits moving. And I think tickets are $50 each and limited to 1,500 total. So your odds are, if you buy only one ticket, one in 1,500, which is not as bad odds as other raffles, although it's not a sure thing, certainly. But it's a good cause, so I wanted to mention that if you go past a fire station. It's deductible, too, especially if you don't win. Op-ed page, time to renew state government, according to Andy Dillon. Okay. I shouldn't have put that paper away, or did I? Yep. What does he have to say? Representative Dillon, he's the majority Democrat, majority leader from Dearborn Heights that was able to keep his job. He says there's too many partisan politics. And he says, this is the newspaper's point of view, not Dillon, but they talk about him too. Dillon, who represents, suggested lawmakers knuckle under and slash the pay and benefits of members of the House and Senate. That's what he said. And at about $80,000 a year, with a work schedule most of us can only dream about, our lawmakers are overpaid. Even more ridiculous is the fact that House and Senate members can draw lifetime health benefits at age 55 if they have served only 6 years in the House or 8 years in the Senate. And he thinks that the government should sacrifice something. And probably Tim Powers, the editor, or James Williams, the publisher, thinks this might be a good idea. If we can't hold down the salaries of those if we can't hold down the salaries of those Wall Street bankers, maybe we can at least set the right example here in local government. We're going to take a break now and come back with a very important discussion about the Alternative Energy Conference coming up here at Henry Ford Community College next week, Friday. And so stay tuned.
We've been in business 10 years and have really built something.
And we want to keep it.
Tornado, cyber attack, anything can happen.
So we went to ready.gov and found free templates and checklists to help put an emergency preparedness plan together. So now we worry less about the unforeseen.
And worry about the foreseen.
Payroll, our customers.
Remember when your hair wasn't gray?
Remember when you had hair?
Hey.
Go to ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and this station.
A leader in education in your community, Henry Ford Community College has provided excellence and innovation in education since 1938. We're proud to have launched the careers of thousands of students both in Michigan and around the world. Celebrate the 70th anniversary of Henry Ford Community College by becoming a student today. Achieve your dreams, and it starts with a visit to hfcc.edu or by calling 1-800-585-HFCC. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
The Trade and Apprentice Education Division of the Henry Ford Community College is excited to present a new 10-credit-hour Renewable Energy Certificate Program. The content of the courses will be structured to inform the students of both present and future renewable energy concepts. This certificate program should interest students who are looking for an alternative to our current reliance on fossil fuels. To learn more about this program, please contact the Trade and Apprentice Education Division at 313-845-9609 or on the internet at www.hfcc.edu.
And we're back here at WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, January the 30th, 2009. I'm your host, Jay Koronick, and we're here in the studio now. Two of our three guests expected, and these two people are very deeply involved in the conference coming up next week, Friday, here at the Henry Ford Community College main campus, Evergreen Road, south of Ford Road. So I want to welcome, first of all, Greg Lukowski from the Alternative Energy Program here at the college. And Greg, this is mic check time. Let's see if, tell us just briefly about the Alternative Energy Program, which is available for students to enroll in and get more education about. We'll get to the Alternative Energy Summit after we do some introductions, but talk to me.
Okay, here's the good news. About 4 years ago, we went to the administration and we presented applications for about four or five classes regarding related to alternative energy. They've been on the books for about 4 years. However, the classes didn't fill. This last year, the classes have filled and overfilled. So we went to the administration, and again, we decided to work on an alternative energy associate degree program, which was approved in December of this last year. Mm-hmm. It's on the book now, on the books.
I would assume that the tide is turning, both in the media and the press, and maybe the time for change or whatever, or even the economic crisis. One way out of the crisis is to, you know, find more appropriate ways to live that in the long term will save money and save on resources. So that's probably helps. So we're one of the few programs like this, aren't we, in the Detroit area? Have Wayne State University got started in this direction, or U of MD next to us?
Not as far as I know. I've been told by one of our suppliers that we're one of the only colleges that in this region, southeastern Michigan, that offers a total associate's degree program in alternative energy. So,
I'm sure they will all get there. They'll have to. I mean, that is, you know, very important for the future of our country, as well as individuals, even short term, to a certain extent. I've always been upset, getting back to the summit idea, is that I don't think we've had a major expo in the Detroit area, a green expo. I mean, there's something called the Green Festival that's organized and travels around the country, and it's in Chicago, I think, every May. It's coming up again this May. So you might have like 80, 100 different alternative energy vendors of one sort or another, mm-hmm. and panel discussions and major national speakers, not necessarily Al Gore, but very important names and a lot of popular names even sometimes, and we just don't even have that here in Detroit. So the Alternative Energy Summit is one of the first of its kind, and it's a great start, too. The second guest we have in the studio right now with us is Eric Rader of the Political Science Department here at the college. And Eric, of course, you've been involved in the last year with a couple of conferences on political topics, and certainly last year was a big political year, too. So tell me about that.
Yeah, we last fall we did a political issues convention, which we've done several, actually since 2004. But we obviously in the election years it generates a lot of interest, and we had a number of legislators and officials from the area who came down to our convention. But it was generated by students. The students organized workshops, and they were involved with promoting issues. And it's designed to be nonpartisan, so that we're not taking positions on the issues, mm-hmm. but rather the idea that students have a role to play in highlighting what issues are most important to them. So I think this the summit that we're doing next week is following a similar format, although it's much more focused on one issue rather than a series of issues, mm-hmm. like we did with the convention.
And there will be a good representation of students from the college here, political science students and others.
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And we I think a number of us offer extra credit options, or even sometimes include this in the syllabus as a requirement that or a paper option for students. So I certainly have been doing that with my students, and hopefully get a number of students at this summit, because that's one of the nice things about being here at the campus. We have a natural audience right here, and the students are actually on the forefront of this issue anyways. They're the ones really pushing. They had started out pushing for this in the last couple of years that we focus on this issue. And it also was one of the issues that was highlighted in our convention back in the fall. This was like, I think maybe the top issue obviously was the economy, but I think issue number two was the environmental sustainability issue. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's great that the students are involved in the breakout sessions, and then they come back and do reports on the breakout sessions. In other words, they're asked to assess, analyze, and pull together the comments that have been made. And this is really what I think causes people to change, or to at least move towards appropriate change, is when they get a chance to not just hear things, but to respond and to analyze and to make it their own, too. That sort of buy-in that happens. Now, this conference, let's say at the outset, is open to the public. It says right here, and it's on the back, folks, of the whole page ad to it, back of Wednesday, January 28th, Press and Guide, Alternative Energy Summit, Henry Ford Community College, Friday, February 6th, 8:30 to 1, and no cost at all. So I highly recommend any particular types of, I mean, probably this is of interest to almost anyone who wants to be a good citizen or wants to look forward to maybe some appropriate choices in the future for their own lives. But what would you say? I mean, just everyone or a couple specific groups that might
be? Well, certainly on campus, any faculty member would be encouraged to, I would certainly encourage faculty members to bring their students to this. And we, certainly it's a natural interest in political science, but I think any discipline here on campus, any department would have an interest in it, whether it's from a science perspective, certainly science. In terms of English, I mean, certainly the idea of writing a paper about this. So this is a very important issue.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of different. I mean, I can't think of any place, any department on campus that wouldn't benefit in some way by having students attend this. And certainly within the wider community, there's certainly a lot of people who could be involved.
And now we've been joined by a third department from the campus, the World Religions. Head of the program, Professor Bill Sechrest is here right next to me. And how did, I know how you got involved, but tell our listeners how a world religions professor got involved in this alternative energy summit.
Well, thank you, Jay. We call it global ethics in my field of comparative religions. We're all in the same boat on this one, regardless whether you're from Africa or Asia or the Americas, Europe. We only have one sky, one set of oceans, one set of Earth systems, and science tells us they're all in decline right now. And so like you've been saying, this is something for everybody. My students are certainly extremely concerned as soon as they find out what the situation actually is. We've been, as a lead up to this conference, we've been showing the documentaries Inconvenient Truth and The 11th Hour. I've just had the opportunity to watch it twice this morning already. And it really drives home the point that all of the Earth's natural systems are currently in decline and we cannot go forward. It's business as usual and hope to leave a happy legacy for current and future generations. So this is a very serious issue. I've been involved with this kind of stuff and since the first Earth Day, which I believe was back in 1970. It's always been a part of my teaching agenda. And the students are, putting their shoulder to the wheel right now. They're deeply concerned. They were the people who instigated this conference last year as part of our Focus the Nation movement, which involved about 1,500 campuses from coast to coast. So this is an ongoing thing, and we're real happy to have this opportunity to invite the general public to come in. It's being spearheaded by the universities and colleges, not just in America, but around the world.
Which one of the three of you would like to talk about the keynote speaker, Peter Sinclair? I see here from the ad he's presenter for former Vice President Al Gore's climate project. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. Who knows best what he's going to talk about or his credentials?
Actually, Greg? I attended a session presented by Peter Sinclair, and a very good presentation. He's going to be our keynote speaker for the day. He's going to start out with the topic global warming, and it makes us think a little bit, make our students think, general society, that we need to change our ways of living, how we use energy, what kind of alternative energy situations we got out there, like wind, solar, hybrid vehicles. So we're going to have a pretty good lineup here, including a couple automotive companies, Ford Motor and GM, going to bring hybrid vehicles. I think DTE is going to come. I think we've got a pretty good day.
I'm looking at the Energy Solutions list here and the program hour by hour. It looks like the presenter, all the microphones are up too high. I'm getting echo on. I sound more echoey than I usually do. And his presentation is going to be shortly after 9 a.m. next Friday, it looks like, after appropriately being introduced. Has he published a book? I see that there's something in, or is it just the topic of his speech, the problem, global climate change?
Well, actually, he does presentations all over the state and all over the country, and you actually can find him on YouTube. He does. He has a YouTube called The Croc related to global warming, and if you can find him on YouTube, I think you'll be pretty impressed with his presentations.
That's referring to crocodiles? Or
No.
Don't want to go into it. Okay.
Jay?
Yes.
There is, it didn't make it into this ad in the paper, but we have a second keynote presenter that's going to be stepping up to the plate right after Mr. Sinclair. And that would be actually, Monica Patel from the Ecology Center in Ann Arbor. and she is going to be telling us a little bit about local, regional, and statewide initiatives to help clean up our mess, basically. They're involved in something called the Clean Coal, Clean Energy Now campaign. They call it the No Coal going forward, and they're actively organizing to try to stop the construction of 8 new coal-powered electrical generation stations in Michigan, which we feel would be very counterproductive in our attempts to moderate global climate change.
Yeah, and there's actually the first breakout session, which is 10 to 10:45, has, I've got 5 different speakers. Mm-hmm. So those are in separate rooms that people can go to one place or the other. And this is all in the Administrative Services and Conference Center at the front of the campus of Henry Ford Community College, Evergreen Road to south of Ford Road. And so it's also called the Andrew Mazzara Center. Although I know in the spring and summer, the trees have so many leaves on them, you can't see the name of the building. But it's just south of our student center, which is pretty visible from the road, folks. And just the next building down, 4 stories high, that's the ASCC building where the Alternative Energy Summit is going to be. Let me just read down the list here of the first breakout sessions. Apparently, someone from General Motors is going to talk about their vehicles or alternative energy vehicles, as well as Greg mentioned, have maybe a car on display. I did an auto show special last week talking about the Volt and 3 cars, you hope. Wow. Think there'll be a Volt there? Greg?
There's going to be a GMC a vehicle, Yukon.
Now that's energy saving.
Saturn. Well, it's a hybrid, though.
Yeah, sure.
It's and we're going to have
better than driving the all gas one or whatever. Yeah.
Saturn Aura and a Chevrolet Malibu. They're all hybrids.
Uh-huh.
And I believe we're going to have an Escape, Ford Escapes, and a Ford Fusion.
At the auto show, they had a Ford Escape plug-in hybrid, which I think it was only in California and it was only a test vehicle, but those plug-ins can go really, really far in a gallon because they just use electricity mm-hmm. most of the time until the batteries give out and then the gas engine has to kick in. But everybody's hoping, at least I am anyway, for plug-in hybrids as soon as possible and just the battery thing. So we've got a couple presenters from the Green Man Studio. That's Peter Sinclair. Is that a vendor of equipment? Or
he's going to be doing the keynote speaking, and he's going to follow up with a breakout session, too.
Okay. That sounds exciting. DTE, we mentioned. Peter Kaiser, Marilyn Kaiser from Baylor Young, Geothermal and Hybrid Heating. So they might be vendors, contractors.
Yes,
okay. That's good. I mean, we're getting a little bit of all-around opinions here. Someone from the University of Michigan, Dearborn, Barry Waldron.
Barry is a geographer who has 3 times so far on campus addressed the issue of peak oil. He's going to be speaking again this coming Wednesday, February 4th, from 3:40 till 5 in our liberal arts building in the L14 in the auditorium there. And then he'll be repeating his remarks in that breakout session on Friday. He's talking about the issue of there's only so much oil, and we're reaching our peak extraction, and from now on it's going to be ever more costly to get the oil out that we use to drive our civilization. So it's going to mean some big changes coming down the line.
It's going to be hard for me to choose between 10 and 10:45, and then we're hit with another breakout session of choices. Looks like maybe Ford Motor might do a presentation since they have a car here. Adam Harris and Mark Kreiderman from the Green Panel, which are energy vendors. And let's see, Melanie McCoy, City of Wyandotte, Wind and Solar Projects. I understand one of the last big... Three?
They're putting 3 wind generators up and down the city of Wyandotte.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I've often told the story that I think back in 2003 when we had the big crisis that is it a Catholic church? It's a church in Wyandotte that the priest had just put in solar panels and that, and he didn't even realize there was a power outage because his system was just going along, cooking along. People call it, oh, the power's all out. Oh, well, why don't you come over to the church if you need something?
That's,
so, talk about forward-looking. I mean, he went off the grid way early, but Wyandotte has always been a little ahead of the city. I mean, you know, they tried to do cable TV for themselves. I mean, just trying to organize it and reduce the cost for everybody from the city point of view, and I know there's difficulties in different places with those kinds of initiatives, but Bill, you were going to talk about Wyandotte or the priest?
Yeah, you're mentioning Father Charles Morris, who runs St. Elizabeth Parish down there. He came as one of our keynote speakers last year, and he's,
Good.
He's coming back. He's excited to come back, and he puts up a display table and talks about his nationwide organization, Interfaith Power and Light.
Okay.
And what they do is they try to organize religious institutions of all particular religious faiths to take the energy crisis seriously and global climate change seriously and build it into their ethical teachings for their parishioners. So
I could try to make some sort of joke or pun on interfaith power and light, which is what I guess religions always tried to do, but now literally they're trying to do that part too. that's wonderful. That's the spirit. I love it when people just do these things because it's the right thing to do. They don't even necessarily see themselves that much as visionaries. They just, well, it's the right thing to do. We'll just go ahead. We'll investigate and just go ahead. And turns out they're in the forefront of it. And they don't, in some cases, don't even realize that. In fact, I just had one of the students here who does the death metal show on Monday nights. He asked me, he said, well, how can I, I'm thinking, you know, I've got a new house going up somewhere and, you know, alternative power. And so I told him about some websites. He did the research and they put up panels. He said, wow, I can save a ton of money in a couple of years. And that, you know, not a couple of years, but depending on the size of his house and that, it's a pretty good idea. In fact, it was with your help, Greg, that I got a couple names to give him, as well as some websites I found on my own, and it wasn't that difficult. Just a couple days of looking around, taking notes, and calling people up, and then he found the appropriate vendor and had it put on. And I think he clearly said he was going to save, of course, short term after it was in from his regular electric bill, but 6 years or so, all paid for by the savings, you know. And that's as cool as you can get. Well, not to leave anyone out here in what the initial the second breakout list said, Dr. Jerry Moroff, author of Endless Energy, wow, I like that idea, is going to be making a presentation, along with our own astronomy professor, Michael Lopresto, Too Hot, Too Cold, Just Right. And is that going to be the same presentation, Bill, he's going to give on Tuesday here on campus, or a little different?
This is actually, he's doing his PhD dissertation on the atmosphere in Venus, Earth, and Mars. So, too hot, too cold, just right. And he's going to share some of his science. It's all related to global climate change. I'd like to say that what you were talking about, the student who figured out that there's all kinds of money to be saved if you retrofit your home. There's going to be an expo in the atrium of our administration building. Yeah, a lot of presenters there. I know last year I came away with a lot of ideas and a lot of contacts, and I actually brought in Robert Burris, who does heating and cooling here with Greg. I brought him out to my house, and he installed some controls on my furnace that he promised to pay for themselves in just 3 years. Meanwhile, I'm cutting my energy bills way down.
Wow. Well, I think this is just great. That's why I'm recommending it on this show. Well, we talked about it briefly last week, but you guys really know what's happening, and hope people see the large number of opinions and different kinds of people, not just some stuffy ivory tower presentation at a college. I mean, Henry Ford Community College is really involved with the community and right on top of the latest trends and issues that really can matter the most to us, not just trends for being trendy, but things that really have a solid core of importance here. I also saw that there's going to be a legislative panel. Maybe, Eric, you wanted to get back to that. And again, we don't know exactly the legislators, the politicians who are elected representatives of the people that are going to show up. But what do you expect to have happen there? That would be like the last session in the day, wouldn't it?
That's correct, yes. It follows, and that's similar format that we've used for our political issues convention. But the idea is that following the breakouts, we'll have several area legislators. I know we've confirmed that Senator Irma Clark Coleman, who is our state senator here in the Dearborn area, is going to be there. And she's been very supportive of anything we do here at the college. She's been a great supporter of HFCC, and she's going to be here. We also will have a representative from the newly reorganized Department of Energy, Labor, and Economic Growth, which is the state department that traditionally had handled, I guess, consumer and business affairs, and now has folded in energy, and the governor and the state government have put a priority on creating green jobs in Michigan. So it's called DLEG, but the new department is sending a representative. They're in the midst of their transition right now, but they want to send somebody here to this, and they're going to be on the panel as well to address what's going on at the state level. And then we have a few other area legislators we've invited. We're just waiting for confirmations from them, but because this is a priority at the state level in Lansing as well.
And as it should be, it's bound to be a growth industry because there's going to be so many advantages for so many people once it gets started. So great opportunity for business people out there who are looking for maybe a new direction, have some money for a startup, know some place to get a loan, but maybe even the state will talk about funding. And of course, we hope that maybe some of the federal government funding sources, job stimulus, alternative energy monies, whatever you call them, that they can be directed this way too. And last but not least, at 1 o'clock, when the conference in that building sort of comes to a close, a tour of our own alternative energy technologies. I assume, Greg, that you'll be in charge
yes.
of that,
yes.
taking them over to our tech building.
Yes, over to our tech building where we have new photovoltaic solar panels. We have a hydrogen fuel cell, which needs to be updated, but we have an example of that.
Now, you have a bunch of windmills out there next to the building that were put in back in the early 2000s. Are they just sort of decorative now? I don't think they've ever been incorporated into a formal program use, have they?
Actually, the windmill's missing right at the moment.
And
we're going to be getting a new one. We're in the process of purchasing a new one.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Good. And so, of course, your classes that will start using some of these new technologies
yes.
will be available starting in the fall. But we're already running, of course, the spot for the alternative energy certificates too.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us the difference between certificates and the 2-year degree program. Is that an associate of arts or associate of science? Okay.
Now we've got a basic renewable energy certificate, which is about 10 credit hours, gives everybody an overview. Those that are interested in the community about, maybe I want to. What can I do with my house? Can I use solar energy? Can I use wind energy? So that kind of gives everybody an overview.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the advanced degree program. Somebody wants to go to the next step. It's about 30-some credit hours. I think it's about 38 hours. And then we've got the degree program, which is 68 hours, which includes science classes, the traditional English classes, and academic courses.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty good overview. An Auto 260 course on alternative energy use for vehicles, and that's why we have Ford and General Motors
mm-hmm.
coming. It's a relatively new class in the automotive division, and we're going to have next year a LEED building certification class, so we can examine. In the paper a couple weeks ago, we had an article that said Grand Rapids is the green city. That's because all their buildings are LEED certified, whether they're being built new or whether they're being remodeled. They're all LEED certified, energy efficient buildings.
Well, I thought as long as I had the three of you here, and I think we've told people enough about the, never can tell them enough about what's going to go on next week here at the college, at Henry Ford Community College, next Friday, February 6th, because there's going to be a lot of information. You got to get here to find out about all these different presentations, all these different ideas. And in the old days, we used to say it was going to blow your mind, but that's probably not current idiom here. But it'll give you some great new ideas. I thought as long as I had these three experts here all involved in this conference, if we just get personal for a moment, I'd like to ask each one of you to give me one suggestion that you think people should most, and maybe they'll be different from one to the other of you, most try to implement in their lives in terms of moving towards a better energy situation in the future, not just cost savings, but in terms of energy, like for your home or your car. What do you think is the most important thing that an individual should look at right now if they haven't done anything yet? We'll start with Greg.
Low fruit. Turn the lights out.
That was mine. But go ahead. There's plenty to go around.
Yeah, no. Well, let me just emphasize what he's saying here, of course. That means that in every house, there's, first of all, there's a lot of phantom devices that bleed energy all the time, whether it's a clock. I just found a way to use my iPhone at night when I'm charging it up. It's got a little, instead of the regular clock that takes its power, and what happens is it goes to sleep
mm-hmm.
after 10 seconds. If I want to see what time it is, I just touch it, and it comes back on. So very, very low power drain, and really the display is only there when you touch it. I'm not saving more than a watt a week probably, but I'm just saying there's all kinds of things you can do there, and also just turning out the lights. Now we've started with your initiative, I know, Greg, a big program at the college to put sensors in a variety of classrooms and maybe all classrooms so that when there's no one in there, the lights go out.
There you go.
Okay. It wouldn't work in my house because I've got my two cats running around every place all the time. But
they're,
you know,
they're sleeping most of the time.
Well, that's true. Yeah, but Eric, your chance from political science. What do you think? It's an individual. I know it's just subjective here, but subjective professional. What do you think an individual should consider first in terms of energy savings?
Well, I think I have to say something that Bill and I did recently is buy purchase cars that are fuel efficient. So when you're considering, I know a lot of people are, this is a bad time for the car market, but if you're considering a car purchase, buying a Ford Focus, for example, or a car that does not use a lot of, that is more fuel efficient, that's, I've saved a lot of money on gas, and I know I'm contributing less to my carbon footprint by doing that. Mm-hmm. Because I commute about 20 miles or so a day, so I'm aware that if I have a bigger car, it's gonna have more of an effect, and I'm not able to carpool, as it turns out, so at least I can use I drive a car that is more fuel efficient, so that's something that I've done personally. I'm just aware when I make those, and any purchase you make, that you be aware of how far it had to be transported to get to where you're buying it. Buying locally is a good thing, because locally produced products don't have to travel as far, and you're generating less energy. The transportation generates less energy if it's a local product. So
a long-term way to save on car expenses is to be less dependent on a car, of course. Right. That is, live closer to where you work, if you're working at all. And of course, that's a long-term thing. You've got to plan maybe 5 years to make those kinds of changes. If you can sell your house you're in now, too, in Michigan, that's good luck. But that's that transportation issue is very, very important. I'm hoping that cities will get more into emphasizing small, short-distance local transit, even, I hate to say, bicycle pass for transportation, not for recreation, where they go around in circles or through forests, but actually get you to work as fast as if you were on the street. And, for example, I've harped on this for years, and I know it sounds crazy, but Dearborn has some of the worst sidewalks along Michigan Avenue, especially South Side, which does run from east to west Dearborn. A bicyclist can't go very fast. I mean, bicycles can go pretty, but you can't go fast when you're hitting bumps and cracks and glass, and they don't even clean up these. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. We had a gentleman who's the director of U of MD's Environmental Interpretive Center on, and he's complaining too about this. I mean, there are very straightforward, simple answers to some of these problems. The city of Dearborn, I know, is starting a big initiative to maybe move the train station to West Dearborn, but then to put in some additional transit opportunities, very inexpensive ways to get people to different places without necessarily using cars. So that's a cool, and we saved the best for last here. Bill Sechrest, what do you think people should consider first of all? You were talking about energy savings on your house.
Yeah, my idea, of course, I did buy a new Ford. Me and Eric are supporting the local industry, but my idea that's really important is to teach your children well the situation, and for the children to teach their parents, because a lot of times the kids are more out front in terms of their awareness of the situation than the older generation. Right. And we just did have the president and the vice president of the Student Environmental Association join us here.
Yeah, I wanted you to introduce them. I was going to say next, who are here, we only have three mics, but they can come and say hello anyway if they want to scoot in.
There's President Jeffrey Nall. Jeff, say hi to the folks out there and tell them why you like the environment.
Hello, everyone. Yes, I'm Jeffrey, and I loved the environment since I was little. I guess I first got hooked on it when I was watching Channel 56, and I was watching a nature show. And ever since then, I like going outside in the woods and just having fun. And so I really want to protect that, because it's important to me, because it's always been a joy throughout my entire life.
It sounds simplistic, but some people are not even aware we have an environment. You know, it's snow, it's cold, but they're not even aware of all the exciting things that they can appreciate and that are important to our life cycle, too. And so thank you for being part of that. It's a Student Environmental Association. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and our other representative here is?
My name is Alyssa Pop. I'm the vice president of the SEA here on campus. Yeah, I recommend anybody who's listening really just to walk out there and, instead of looking at all the buildings and all the cars and everything, look around, take a look up in the trees, see what you can see. I mean, it's a big world. Look at the bigger picture, you know, the universe. Think about everything around you and what's going on. there's a lot to appreciate, and if we don't do anything about it, it's not going to be there for much longer. So,
well, the universe will be there, but
our of course, but our environment, us as a race, I guess.
In my neighborhood in East Dearborn, and maybe it's just for some of the people just want to be different, but some of us are naturalizing our yards. In other words, we're not planting more grass, we're planting bushes, ground cover. City of Dearborn says your grass can't be more than 6 inches high or you're going to get a fine and you don't look like everybody else. You got to keep your... But they don't... Ground cover could go 8 or 10 or 12 inches and got little flowers in it or whatever. So my whole front yard, I'm proud to say, although my neighbors think I'm crazy, they've all got golf course type yards that they have to water every day in the summer and cut every week at least in order to keep them down at 2.5 inches. And I know if they grow up that way and they feel good about it, I guess it's okay. But wouldn't it be cool if a whole neighborhood just decide to naturalize altogether? If you got a good neighborhood association, and they wouldn't have to cut grass anymore. Imagine. You know, my grandfather's idea was, he hated grass cutting. He said, just tear it all up, put in concrete, and paint it green. But that's not ecologically sound. You know, we need the place for birds and bees. And I'm very proud that in my neighborhood, I'm the only one that has real frogs that live in the yard. I mean, anybody seen a frog recently? Yeah. That's because I won't even use the pesticides, you know, that kill you. You know, I got some cornmeal, something that does some stuff. So everybody has their way into it. A lot of ideas, and whatever you can do, if everybody, I think Al Gore at that last big international conference he had, they tried to make, everybody, or almost everybody, just did a little something. Wow, what an impact on our world and our environment and energy savings and cost savings down the road, too, for everybody. So I'm really excited. I'm going to be over